Today, Baruch Hashem, I was starting a new Chumash, a new book, and today we want to talk about a topic that has been asked so many times by so many people, and in this parasha, it's very focused on, is why is there a separation between all the Jews? And in this parasha, is called Bamidbar, it's focusing on the concept of counting all the Jews, Bnei Israel, but not counting them as one group, counting them as tribes. And there's a lot of emphasis in this parasha about the tribes. They were counted separately, they were parked separately, they had different leaders, flags, colors, symbols. And there's a big question. Why? Why do we have to be tribes? Now, today we don't have tribes. I mean, we do. We just don't know who's who. But now we are separated in groups. So many different groups. And you see that the result from it is hate towards each other. To a point that people don't talk to each other, there's segregation, schools for Sfaradim, schools for Ashkenazim, he's from this group, he's from that group, it causes a lot of problems. But on the other hand, we see that it originates from the Torah. To a point that in this parasha, all that it's talking about is this separation. And there has to be separation, and it's all about the separation of the tribes. So the sad reality is that in our generation it causes such a separation that it's already coming down to hate. Literally hate. People hate each other because he's from this group, he's from that group, and chas v'shalom, not to intermarry, he's Sfaradi, Ashkenazi, all sorts of nonsense. I mean, that's the sad reality. You know, there's a joke that there's one time a Jew was on a ship. And there was a storm, and unfortunately the whole ship drowned. I mean, not drowned, the ship doesn't drown, it sank. And he somehow grabbed a piece of wood, and he was floating, and he was able to survive. Everybody drowned, the ship sunk, and he survived. And he got washed off to the shore. Of course, he was very happy that he survived, but now he's in the middle of nowhere. He's on an island. He doesn't know what to do. He's walking around, doesn't even know where he's going to get food from. Suddenly, he sees another person from far away. He starts running to him, and they meet each other. They hug each other. Oh, and out of instinct, he says, Shalom Aleichem. And the person answers back, Aleichem Shalom. Are you Jewish? Yeah, I'm Jewish. I'm also stuck here. Wow, hugging, kissing. So the first one that's already lives on the island tells him, come. And he takes him, he feeds him, gives him food the entire week, and helps him, shows him around. This is the island, this is where we get our bananas, this is where we get the coconuts. Gives him the tour of the island. Comes Shabbat, he's like, oh boy, how are we going to keep Shabbat now? What are we going to do? So he's like, how are we going to even pray in a shul? So the first guy tells him, don't worry, we have a shul here too. Really? We have a shul? He's like, yeah. So comes Erev Shabbat, he takes him and he sees two buildings. He says, two buildings? You have two shuls? He's like, yeah, I have two shuls here. He's like, why do you have two? You're only one person. He says, this is the shul where I pray, and that shul, I'll never go into there. So that's the sad reality, that people can live in a place and it's not a deserted island, and they'll say, that shul, I'll never go in there. That's how sad the situation is. So why are we not united? Why are we separated into tribes? It's a big question, and it's a problem. And in this parasha, the parasha is not only that it separates the tribes, it's separating everything. It separates us in tribes. Then, how we were parked. Each one was parked in a different place. Then each one had a flag. Each tribe had a color. It was so separated. Even when it goes to the tribe of Levi, then it separates them into groups. This group, Bnei Kehat, they were in charge of that part of the Mishkan. Bnei Merari, they were in charge of this part. And it's also separations all the time. Why? I mean, it almost doesn't make sense. Why all these tribes? And not only that, the book of Bamidbar, you know, we just finished the book of Vayikra, it's full of laws, just laws. The book of Bamidbar, there's barely any mitzvot. You're not going to find mitzvot, a few mitzvot here and there. Mainly the book of Bamidbar is the stories. It's stories, how they went out of the mitzvah, I mean, what happened to them after they went into the desert, and all sorts of stories. And barely any mitzvot. Now another interesting thing is that doesn't matter if it's a leap year or a regular year, the parashah Bamidbar is always going to be read before Shavuot. That's a rule. Sometimes parashat Nassau also will be before Shavuot, but in all cases parashat Bamidbar is always going to be before the holiday of Shavuot. Even if it's a leap year, even if it's not, it doesn't matter. Now, so we're coming now also to Shavuot. If you remember when the Torah was given, it says that they all parked in front of the mountain, keish echad belev echad. They parked as one individual, totally united. And they all got the Torah united. So why the Torah is so into separating us, and why is it manifesting already into our generation and generations before that were so separated, but the Torah is requiring us to get the Torah together and united. And we're also now, next week, Bezrat Hashem, is the holiday of Shavuot, that besides receiving the Torah, it signifies that we have to work on our unity. Because they, even though they were parked separately, but they were all united when they got the Torah. So we want to address that this whole concept of A, why the tribes? And B, we see now the Torah was given. First of all, there's also a big question, why the Torah was given in the desert? Should have been given in a beautiful place. Maybe like Hashem should have created an oasis with beautiful palm trees and waterfalls. You know, maybe he could arrange a big stadium, like something fancy. We're giving it in the desert. Everybody's on the sand there, and there's nothing nice there. So, mainly that we know the Torah was given in the desert because the Torah is considered hefker. Hefker means that anybody can come and take. It doesn't belong to anybody. Nobody can come and take ownership of the Torah. That's the main reason why, there's other reasons, but that's the main reason why the Torah was chosen to give it in the desert. Because Hashem could have said, you know what, let's just take you straight into Israel. I'll put you in Yerushalayim, get the Torah in Yerushalayim. Get the Torah, I don't know, I'll take you to Switzerland, there's beautiful mountains there. But Hashem wanted to make sure that we know that the Torah belongs to everybody. This is called Hefker. Hefker, it means that now there's no owners to that. Nobody can come and claim the Torah belongs to me. And nobody can come and say, I have more ownership on the Torah than you. The Torah belongs to everybody equally. Everybody who wants can come and take. So this is one of the main reasons why the Torah was given in the desert. But also, the Torah was given because Hashem wanted us to know that it belongs to everybody. There's a story about a certain Tana. His name is Rabbi Yanai. And he once saw an individual walking into the city, dressed in a very nice suit. He looked very, very respectful. Beautiful suit, a nice tie. I mean, they didn't have suits and ties then, but for our imagination, he was dressed very, very, very respectful. So he called him in, and he assumed that he's either a very wealthy person, or a very learned person, something. He invited him for the meal, made a beautiful meal for him. Not every day you see such an honorable person coming into your city. And then he was assuming that maybe he's a scholar. So he tells him, can you tell me something about the Torah? He says, I don't know anything about the Torah. He says, can you tell me anything about the Nevi'im? No, I don't know anything. Something, Gemara, Oral Torah, Mishnah, can you tell me anything? He's like, I don't know anything. So he got so upset that he was time to say Birkat HaMazon, and he told the guest, do you know how to bench? Do you know how to say Zimun? He's like, no. So he's like, okay, repeat after me. And he says, pick up the cup. The person picks up the cup, and the Rabbi Yanai says, Kelev. So the person says, Kelev, repeats after him. He says, Achal et pito shel Yanai. A dog ate the bread of Yanai. That's what he told him to say. So the person gets offended and upset, and he tells him, why are you preventing me from my inheritance? So what are you talking about? He's like, listen, I'm not a big scholar, I don't know anything about the Torah, but one time I crossed next to a yeshiva, and I heard, Torah tziva Moshe, Morasha kilat Yaakov. It means Torah tziva lanu Moshe, the Hashem gave us the Torah, but this is a morasha, an inheritance, to Kilat Yaakov, to the congregation of Yaakov. I'm part of the congregation, I'm Bnei Israel, which means I inherited the Torah also. You're now preventing my Yerusha from me, you're not giving my Yerusha, you're not teaching me. Instead of teaching me, you're telling me that a dog ate your bread. So, we learn from this story in the Gemara that everybody has ownership on the Torah. We inherited it. You don't have to be a scholar, you don't have to be a businessman, it doesn't matter who you are. The Torah belongs to all of us, equally. Nobody can come and say, I know more Torah, I own it more. But we see a great connection between the holiday of Shavuot and the parasha of Bamidbar. And in this parasha, Bemet, basically what it's talking about, that after a year in the desert, they went out, was a big excitement, they got out of Mitzrayim, they got the Torah, started building the Mishkan, they were busy a whole year, they finally built the Mishkan, and that's it, and now life goes into the regular pace. That's it, this is life now. Now what? Right away, as they finish with that, the book of Bamidbar starts that Hashem ordered Moshe to start counting the Jews. But Hashem doesn't know how many people they are. He needs somebody to count them. First of all, they already were counted when they went out of Mitzrayim. More than that, Hashem really needs to count. Well, he doesn't know any people are there. But it says that when something's very dear to you, then you count it. If you have a lot of money, you know how much money you have in your pocket. But you every couple of hours you take it out, you flip through the bills, you count it, even though you counted 20 minutes ago. You know, not too long ago I met this individual that was saving for a long time, and unfortunately, I mean, it was a very special story because his daughter unfortunately was choking while he was driving and he stopped the car. He saved her. It was a big miracle. He literally saved her. She was mamash about to die. And the same day, somebody broke into his home and stole that money that he was saving for months. And he understood from that was mamash an atonement, a kapara. He got his daughter back. He had to lose the money. But, it's totally off the subject, but he was saying how he was constantly counting the money. You have diamonds, you constantly look at them. You have a lot of money, it's like little kids. They have these cards. They know what cards they have, but they keep looking at it, and they count it all the time, and I have this type of card and that card. Something is dear to you, something is very special to you, then you count it a lot. So, Hashem told Moshe, count Bnei Israel. Now you would think that he would count it all in one big general count. No, he counts them by tribes. And the Torah comes and says, in this tribe was such and such, in this tribe was such and such. Who cares? Just tell me, there was altogether 603,000 people, that's what they counted, not including, of course, the women and the children, but the men. Why you have to tell me that in the tribe of Yehuda was that amount of people, in the tribe of Menashe was that amount? I don't understand that. Why the Torah again? Separation. Comes a very interesting thing in the Torah. I mean, everything is precise in the Torah. That every time, if you read the parasha, it says, Livnei Shevet Yehuda, Livnei Shevet Issachar. It says the word Livnei. Livnei means to the sons of. It should have said Bnei Yehuda. L'shevet Bnei Yehuda. There's only one Shevet that it doesn't say the word Livnei. It just says Bnei, Bnei Naphtali. There's a question, why everybody are mentioned in the Torah, Livnei, to the sons of the tribe, and the tribe of Naphtali, it says Bnei Naphtali. The Arizal explains a very interesting thing, that he says that Moshe Rabbeinu went from one tent after the other to count. And Moshe had Ruach HaKodesh, he didn't have to go into the tent. He would stand next to the tent and know in this tent there's 20 people. In this tent there's 30 people. He had a little notebook. Maybe he had an iPad, I don't know. But he had a notebook and he wrote how many people in the tent are. When he came to the final count and he gathered everybody, then he would read out of the notebook, Livnei Yehuda, 80,000. And he ripped it off here. Livnei Issachar, to the kids of this tribe, I see such and such. And the last on the list, the last in the Pinkas, in the notebook, was Naphtali. So he didn't have to say Livnei, it was already left in the notebook. It says, Bnei Naphtali is left such and such. So, but again, the Torah brings me details for a reason. And it brings me this detail to show me Moshe Rabbeinu literally counted them completely separately. He didn't count them as one general count. It was counted separately, and the point was to know how many people are in each tribe that I know. I mean, some tribes are very big tribes, some tribes are very small tribes. But again, the point was that the counting was also separate. Then the Torah goes in how they parked. Which tribe parked in which position? The Aron Kodesh was in the middle. Next to it was the camps of Aaron and Moshe and the priests. Then the camps of the Levites, they were also separate. And then groups of threes, every side. In the northern side, three tribes. In the southern side, three tribes. And it goes and tells us where they parked. Again, another separation. Why couldn't they just say they all parked next to the ark? Why the... Again, another separation. More than that, it comes and tells us that each tribe has a flag. And it was a very thorough description that each one had a flag. For example, it says that Reuven, his flag was red. And inside the flag was a drawing of the Dudaim. If you remember the story with Leah, Reuven was the oldest son. He had a sense of responsibility. And one time he comes to Leah, his mother, and he sees her very sad. And he tells her, well, why are you so sad? So she says, you know, I get pregnant every year. And now I don't know why, I stopped getting pregnant. It's sad to me. So him being a caring child, he went to the nutritionist and he asked her, what fruit is fertile? So she told him, there's a certain fruit, it's called Dudaim. That makes a woman very fertile. So he went and bought it for her, and he gave it to her. And sure enough, she got pregnant. So on his flag is the fruit that is called Dudaim, to show his essence, the caring, and that was literally the essence of the tribe. And it goes one tribe after the other. I mean, another tribe is Shimon, for example. Shimon, you know, the flag was called Piteda. Piteda is a green flag. And in the flag was drawn the city of Shechem. If you remember the story with Shimon and Levi, they went in there. Now, technically, this should be a tragic story. This is a violence. But the Torah sees the positive part of it and says, no, they had a lot of caring. They cared for the honor of the sister and they cared for the honor of their family, and they did what they did. But the point is that the Torah comes and gives me exact details of how their flags were. Why do I need flags? Bechlal, our sages explain that the concept of flags, for now all the nations they have flags, this is where it originates from. It originates from the Torah that the tribes had flags. Now there's a commentary called Abarbanel. He explains that the reason for the flags, because they're about to go into war. And that was a war tactic. Because they're about to go into Eretz Israel. At the time, they didn't know it's going to be 40 years. They didn't know there's going to be a sin of the spies. They were preparing for war. Then they sent the spies. The spies messed up. So they got punished to stay 40 years. But Abarbanel explains, no, there's nothing wrong with that. There was a war tactic, parked in positions, and coming with the flags, and this is, coloring their faces with color. That's what they used to do in the olden days. That's tactics of war. But we, regardless, our sages explain that now the nations, they have colors, they have a flag that comes from the Torah, that every nation had a flag. But we see again the separation. And you know, the separation was that the tribes were not allowed to marry each other. You know, we weren't allowed to marry between the tribes. And for example, there was a law, what would happen when there was a family with only girls? Girls would not be able to get a piece of the land. Only the boys would get the nachala, the piece of the land. So what would happen when there are girls and they don't get a piece because there's no males in the family? You know the famous story with the daughters of Tzofchad. They came and demanded. They say, "Hey, we're not going to get a piece of the land because we're not we don't have boys in the family." So the rule was that the girls had to marry the same men from the same tribes. They weren't allowed to marry outside of the tribes. Later on, if you remember, there's a saying that on the 15th day of Av, it says Lo yamim tovim bli Yisrael ke tu be'av. That this was considered a very special day for the Jews. It's known that all the single people, the men and the women, used to go to the fields and cover themselves and decorate themselves with all sorts of jewelry. And that was the day of love, how you call it in America, Valentine's Day. So that was the Jewish Valentine's Day. The explanation is that on that day, they allowed to intermarry between the tribes. That's when they decided that the tribes can marry each other. That's where it originates from, that the Yamim Tovim, that the good days for Am Yisrael, it originated then, because then this rule was changed and now they're allowed to marry between the tribes. But we still see that there is a very strong emphasis in the Torah about the tribes. And not only that, now we don't know which tribe we're in. I mean, some people say that all of us are from the tribe of Judah, that all the rest, we don't know where they are, and all of us are remainings of the tribe of Judah. The reality is that we don't know which tribe we belong to. The only ones who can maybe rely on and know which tribe they're from is the Kohanim and the Levim. These are the only ones that we can rely on. But like I mentioned many times, even they don't really know 100%. You know how many people think that they're Kohanim and they're not Kohanim? Or some people, they don't even know that they're Kohanim and they are. And same with Levim. There's still, even with that, a confusion. But we know that very soon Mashiach is going to come, and you know what's one of the first things he's going to do? He's going to tell us which tribes we belong. He's going. You need me? Yes. He's going to tell us to which tribe we belong. He's going to smell us. He's not even going to even look at us. He's going to be able to smell a person and tell him, "You're from Shevet Asher. You're from Shevet Issachar." That's one of the first things that Mashiach is going to do. So we see that even when Mashiach is going to come, we're going to have the concept of tribes. Now, where do we know that Mashiach is going to tell us which tribes we are? Because I've been mentioning that many times and people say, how do you know? Who said that Mashiach is going to tell us which tribes we are? So there is a nevuah, a prophecy in the book of Yechezkel, You can find that at the end of the book, that it says that Yerushalayim will have 10 gates, 12 gates. יהיו לירושלים 12 שערים. So Yerushalayim, to go into Beit HaMikdash, will have 12 gates, and each tribe will have to go through his gate. Now we're going to have technology. So there's going to be, now you go into airports, you go through the metal detector, there's going to be a special gate, and if you go through the wrong gate, it will start beeping, and the security will be like, sir, we're very sorry, you're from the wrong tribe, you have to go through your gate. Of course, I'm joking and I'm making it more funny. But the reality is, the Prophet Yechezkel says that Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, is going to have 12 gates. We learn from that, and the Mashiach is going to come and tell us which tribe we belong to. And we're going to have to enter Jerusalem through this gate. Excuse me? Okay, wait. There is. That's what the Arizal did. But we want to know why we are separated in tribes and why Mashiach is going to reveal to us which tribe we belong to. I mean, we want to understand what's the point of the tribes. Which started with Avraham Avinu, then it went to Yitzchak, then it went to Yaakov. Each time was one. Suddenly from Yaakov it jumped to 12 tribes. And in essence, you know, if I would see something positive in it, I would say, okay, fine, do tribes. But in essence, practically, I see that it's causing problems. We don't even know who tribes we are, and we're just fighting because I'm a different group. And this, you know, it says Bechlal, that in Am Yisrael, there's only machlokot, only disagreements. You know, in our generation, there are two groups that they wear their hats a little bit different. One group is called Hasidim, and the other group is called Nitaim. And one group wears the hat that the point of the hat is down, and one group wears the hat that the point is up. That's a machloket. There's a disagreement on the hat. That's how sad it is. So I don't see something positive necessarily with the separation. It causes a problem. It causes now fighting. And we do see that there's machlokot. There's all the time. There's disagreements between the groups. There's disagreements in the groups. The disagreement, doesn't matter who you are, what you are. You pronounce the word a certain way, there's already a disagreement. So what's the point behind the tribes? Now, to kind of understand the concept, we want to understand the point. Because if the Torah goes into length about the tribes and the separation, must be something to it. So there's a story with the Rebbe from Kotsk. Sorry. The Rebbe from Kotsk, that he had a certain follower, a student. And he was a very lucky guy because his father-in-law used to support him. He used to study Torah all day long, and his father-in-law would pay the bills. And you know, there's a joke that there was a certain girl that wanted to marry a certain boy, and she brought the boy to the father. So the father starts asking him questions. What do you do? He says, I learn Torah. He's like, okay, and very soon you want to marry my daughter? How are you going to support yourself? So he says, Hashem will provide. Okay. I said, okay, very nice. And later on, you want to have a kid? How are you going to support the kid? So he says, Hashem will find me the solution. No, I'm not worried. I have trust in Hashem. He says, but what's going to happen later on? You have more than one kid. You'll have maybe 5 or 10 kids. He says, Hashem will provide. I'm not worried. Okay, he goes out. So the daughter tells him, no, daddy, do you like him? He says, yeah, he seems like a very nice guy, but I don't know why he keeps calling me Hashem. So in this Talmid, the chassid of the Rebbe from Kotsk, that was the deal. The father-in-law saw, he's a great scholar, and he says, I want you to learn Torah, I want you to marry my daughter, I want you to be my son-in-law, and I'm willing to pay for that, I'm willing to support you. And one time, after many years, a tragedy happened and the father-in-law died. Now everybody came to this individual and said, listen, you're a very wise man. You have your head screwed well on your body. The father died. We need somebody to run the business. We want you to do it. So he had to take over the business. So he was very concerned, because for half a year he's not learning Torah. He's just running the business. He goes to the Rebbe from Kotsk, and he tells him, listen, I don't know what to do. Very soon comes Rosh Hashanah. You know, I only know how to learn Torah. This is the story. My father-in-law died. I took over the business. And I'm coming now to Rosh Hashanah, and I barely have any Torah with me. I'm only busy with the business. I didn't learn any Torah. I feel very bad. So the Rebbe from Kok explained to him, listen, you have to look at the positive side here. Up until half a year ago, you only had one mitzvah, and this mitzvah was called learning Torah. Now Hashem decided to give you a few more mitzvot, so He made you a business owner. Look how many mitzvot you're doing now. You're dealing honestly, yosek beyosher, you give tzedakah, you give charity, you give maaser, you support poor people, you're able to work on your honesty, and he starts giving him a whole list of things that comes with when you have a business. And he says, look how many mitzvot you have now. Once you only had one mitzvah of learning Torah. Now you have many mitzvot. So you're entering, you know, the Rosh Hashanah with a lot of mitzvot. You have to see the positive side. Sometimes Hashem wants you to be busy with other mitzvot, not only with learning Torah. Some people, all they do is learn Torah, but they're missing out on many mitzvot. Some people, they only have a business. They barely learn Torah. But look how many mitzvot they have to do. And the thing is that Hashem wants you to do a certain mitzvah. And sometimes you want to do something, and Hashem says, this is not your mitzvah. And I heard of a certain individual, a story, that he was very into his outreach. And every Rosh Hashanah, he would invite a lot of people to his home. And he wanted to show them how beautiful the Rosh Hashanah is. But the result was that he had to pray very fast, because he had to attend his guests. And every year it hurt him that he can't pray long on Rosh Hashanah. So he says, you know what? After many years of guests, this year I decided not to have guests. I want to pray. I want to focus on my prayers on this Rosh Hashanah. And I want to pray for what's called barichut, long prayers. Tov, he goes into the shul on Erev Rosh Hashanah, he's all happy. This year I'm going to pray quietly. I'm going to come home at 10 o'clock at night. I don't care. He was so happy that he's going to pray this year. And he sees a couple, walks into the shul. The man doesn't have a beard, doesn't have a yarmulke, the woman doesn't look even religious at all. And his nature to outreach and to mekar people, right away he went to them and he's like, can I help you? So they told him, listen, we're not observant, but we know today is Rosh Hashanah, and we know it's a religious area, and we wanted to come and see how Rosh Hashanah is really done. So he was like, okay, come, I'll take you home. And of course he didn't pray Barichut. He had to attend his new guests. And he understood from that Hashem's intention is not for me to pray long. Hashem wants me to inspire people and to get them closer to Hashem. So sometimes you want to do something and you really want to do it, but Hashem is preventing it from you, so to say, to do it, because he says, I don't want you to do this right now. I don't want you to learn Torah. I want you to be a business owner. So you can, lasok beyosher, you know what it means, lasok beyosher, is to deal in business honest and no stealing. It's a very hard thing to do. Most business owners fail in that. Yosher, not osher, yosher. Yosher is being straight, yashar, honest. It's very easy in business to round corners, so to say. I'm not talking about stealing right now, but it's a very big challenge. To be honest, and then to take the money that you earn and give it to charity. Being a business owner is a very hard task. So sometimes the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do a certain thing, and it's not what you want to do. Sometimes I say also, you know, I want to pray, leave me alone, I want to pray. I want to pray for 2 hours quietly, and somebody will come and start talking to me. And sometimes I will get upset. Leave me alone, I want to pray now quietly. But then I understand Hashem doesn't care about my prayer right now. Hashem wants me to inspire that individual because He knows I know how to talk good, and I have a gift to inspire that person. Hashem says, I don't need you to pray right now. This is not your department. And sometimes I also say, I wish I could just sit and learn for 5 hours right now. And instead of the 5 hours, I do other things. And instead of getting discouraged and saying, why I can't find 5 hours quietly to study? Because I understand that's not Hashem. Hashem doesn't want me to study right now. Hashem wants me right now to inspire somebody, to help somebody, to teach somebody. So we see that there are many different ways to serve Hashem. And one time, it was the angels that asked Hashem, which one of these Jews of yours you like the best? Who's the favorite ones? The scholars, the simple ones, the business owners that give charity, the ones that have struggles, who do you like the best? And Hashem says, I like them all. I like them all the same way, because I get nachat from each one of them separately. If you have, Hashem says, I have 12 kids, and I have 12 types of nachat. And if you have one kid, you can only get nachat in a very, nachat is this pleasure you get from the child, but you can only get one. If you have 5 kids, you get many different types of nachat. This kid is honest, this kid is a scholar, this kid has a good heart, this kid helps you. You want all the types of the nachat. You want to enjoy all the categories, so to say. So Hashem says, I love all of them, because each one is good in something. And I like what they do. He's a good scholar, he learns a lot of Torah. This guy is very honest, this guy is very charitable, this guy is very courteous. Each one has something. And each one has a job. And Hashem designed it in such a way that we all have different jobs. Hashem wants us to serve Him in different ways. Harbe darachim lamakom, it says. There are many ways to get closer to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. As long as it's in the walls of Halakha, according to the Torah, then it's cool. It's okay. I'm not talking right now when people come and start reforming the religion and adding things and taking off things and saying, I'm going to serve Hashem how I want. Many people say, you come and tell them, why don't you put tefillin on? I'm religious in my heart. That's all sorts of answers people say. I met not too long ago a person, he always told me, Ani ish ma'amin. I'm a believer. I said, okay, I'm very happy that you believe, but how does it come into actions? No, Ani ma'amin. Yes, I said, but it says in the Torah to do mitzvot, it doesn't say to believe. So people come with all sorts of inventions. That's how I want to be connected to Hashem. We have to be connected to Hashem according to what the Torah says, and we can't add or remove laws from the Torah. As long as it's in the guidelines of the Torah, serve Hashem however Hashem wants you to serve Him. And that's one of the main reasons that we have this separation. Because Hashem says, I want the diversity. I want many different ways that you can serve Me. You know, there's a story with the Baal Shem Tov that there was a decree on a certain city, and he saw it in his Ruach HaKodesh, and he knew that the city is in big trouble. There's a decree, and maybe Chas V'Shalom, they're all going to die. So they all went to the Baal Shem Tov, and what should we do? And so he says, okay, you know what? Gather all the boys that are the wild ones, the ones that are off the derech, the ones that don't want to go to yeshiva, the ones that are on the streets and making problems. Gather them all together. He said, these boys? Yeah, give me these boys. And he puts them all together in a room, and he told them to say a certain prayer. Sure enough, it worked. The decree was annulled. So they told him, why did you choose these boys? I mean, wouldn't you want to choose the scholars? Or wouldn't you want to choose the pious ones that to pray? You're choosing the hoodlums? So he says, listen, I saw in my Ruach HaKodesh that the gates of mercy were locked. So I needed to get some guys that know how to break locks. So I needed these guys. Sometimes you need the ones who, you know, you would think that they're not good for nothing, but they know how to break into houses. I need them too. So there are many ways to serve Hashem. And Hashem wants that. Hashem wants to have this diversity. And you know, there's a question, why do we have so many sidurim, so many types? Okay, let's say I would say Ashkenazi Sfaradi, fine, two. But you know how many types of sidurim you have? Each one is different. So there's another question. Okay, I see the tribes, not only the tribes, but why the sidurim? So the Arizal explains that there are 12 gates in Shemayim. And our prayers go through these 12 gates. And every sidur is precise, exactly, that fits to the person that says it, that his prayer will go through that specific gate. This was actually explained by the Arizal, but brought down by his student, Rabbi Chaim Vital, in the book Pri Etz Chaim, and he explains, there are 12 gates in Shemayim. And each sidur, each type, it's not that one is more right than the other. It's precise that when you say it, that's the type of sidur. Type is not the right way to say. In Hebrew we say nosach. I think the closest way to translate it will be type. But if I'm using a certain sidur, it means these are the codes, the words are like codes, that will open the safe in Shemayim. I can have now a safe that has millions and millions of dollars, millions of dollars worth of diamonds and jewelry, and there's going to be a code to the safe. And only whoever knows the code can open the safe. And if you miss one digit from the safe, from the code, you're not going to be able to open the safe. And this is example, exactly the prayers. The words of the prayers are code. And when you say the code a certain way, then it opens a certain safe in Shemayim. That's exactly what prayer is. Now, in our day, if you know that in the smartphones, for example, you can lock the phone with a code, but you can also lock the phone with a fingerprint. And the code is a fingerprint. Nobody can open. You know, the kids go quietly at night and they take the finger of and put it on the phone to unlock the phone. So today you can lock the phone with a fingerprint. So code is very universal. Whoever has the code can open it. But the fingerprint, only the finger can open it. This is the exact same thing with the prayer, that you need a certain code to open a certain safe. So we know there are 12 gates in the heavens. Through these gates all the prayers go through. That manifests into the world to 12 tribes. When it comes to the prayers, the Arizal actually, since he knew that in our generation there's a lot of confusion, then he actually created a 13th gate. And he said, through this gate anybody can go in. That's why the Nosach, the Sidur of the Arizal, he says this is like a general Nosach. Anyone can pray from it and it will be good for everybody. Till Mashiach is going to come. But the point of it is there are 12 ways, 12 channels, so to say, to connect to Hashem. The another way to analyze it is, imagine you have a beautiful palace and there's a king in there and you want to visit the king. So you can come through the main door, you can come through the back door, you can come through a tunnel underneath the palace, you can come with a helicopter and land in the yard. There are many different entrances to go into the palace. And Hashem says, yes, I want you to come to me in many different ways. You know, if you would take now a picture and you would paint it only with blue, there's not going to be much of a picture. It's just going to be a blue sheet. In order for it to be a beautiful painting, you need different colors. A little bit of blue, a little bit of white, a little bit of green, a little bit of yellow. And then you put it in the right place, it will form a beautiful shape. So the Jews are compared to colors. That's why each tribe had a color. That's why the priests on the breastplate, each stone was a different color. Because we are compared to colors. And you can only make a beautiful painting with many different colors. You can't produce a beautiful painting with one color. And Hashem says, I want you to be different. I want you to serve me in many different ways. Baruch Hashem, we have 6 kids. Neither one of them looks like the other. They all look completely different. Put them all together. Take a picture. They look like from different families. One has brown hair. One has blonde hair. One has looks like this. They don't look alike. I mean, you can see a little bit of a resemblance. But they look completely different. And their personalities are completely different. Totally, totally different. And we always say, my wife and me, how interesting it is. How boring would it be if they all look the same and act the same. This one is more quiet. This one is more spicy. This one is more like this. They're all different. And Hashem says, I want you to be different. I want you to serve me in many, many different ways. The only problem is that we abuse the idea and we fight with each other. Hashem says, I created the separation for a reason. I created it because, exactly like I told you, because I want to make a beautiful painting, I need a lot of colors. And I want one to be serious, and the other one to be funny, and the other one to be a clown, and the other one to be a jokester, and this one to be, maybe he'll be lazy here, but he's very good here. I want everything. I want all the ways. I want you to serve me in many different ways. I don't want it to be boring. I want it to be colorful. And that's why I separated you. The problem is that we, instead of completing each other, we fight with each other. The nation is compared to many things. I told you it's compared to colors, but it's also compared also to an army. When we left Egypt, it says that we went out al tzivotam. We are tzivot Hashem. And in an army, you have the Air Force, you have the Marines, you have the intelligence, you have the commando, you have the cannons, whatever it is, how it's called in English, the tanks. You can't make it with one corps. You need everybody together. Can you imagine in the middle of the war, the army is fighting with each other? They're all fighting together. This one is helping each other, and we're the same thing. We all have different jobs, so to say, and we have to help each other. I like to compare it to when you build a building. You can have the most gorgeous, most beautiful, most fanciest building in the world, and you need many trades in order to build a building. You need an engineer, you need an architect, you need the interior designer, you need the plumber, you need the electrician, you need so many different trades. Now imagine how you would build a building for $500 billion, the most beautiful building in the world, and imagine now it would be missing toilets. The building is not going to be complete. Now in essence, if you would ask somebody who's the most important person in the building, in the trades, people will say the engineer, maybe the architect. But if you tell them, what do you think about the plumber? Is the plumber important? Nah, he's just a plumber. He's dealing with the pipes. But if you build that building and the building doesn't have toilets, it's worthless. Yes, it might be a strong building and a very beautiful one, but I need to go to the bathroom. Such a building, there's no bathrooms. So also the plumber is very important here. So we are building the building for Hashem. It says in the Midrash, last week's parasha, in Parashat Mechukotai, the Midrash of this parasha says, why did Hashem create the world? Hashem wanted to have a dwelling place in the world below. So He built the world, and we have to build it for Him. So we're building a building. So you're the architect, you're the engineer, I'm the plumber, you're the painter, we all have to work together. And we have to work in conjunction, together. That's the thing. The problem is that we fight with each other. There's a story that there was once a very rich person, and he was called a Gvir. And at the same town, there was a very simple person who was known to be a driver of wagons. In English, it's called the Glon. One was a very wealthy individual, the other one was a simple person driving wagons. In our day, will be equivalent to a truck driver or a bus driver, just driving a wagon. In the olden days, they would drive a wagon. In Hebrew, it's called the Glon. Anyways, the story says that came Erev Shabbat, both of them walked into the shower to get ready for Shabbat. The simple man went into the shower, chick-chack, 30 seconds, and out. The Gvil, the wealthy person, oh, he walks in, he has 7 types of soaps, he has people scrubbing his back, scrubbing his hands, oh, he's a total different shower. They both walk out of the shower and they start walking towards the shul. The same simple person, the Eglon, lived very close to the shul, so he right away goes into the synagogue. The rich person lives in an estate, so just going from the home to the main street takes some time. But as he was walking to shul, he sees a Jew riding into the village, and it was a rainy day, the floor was muddy, and his wagon goes into the mud and he gets stuck. And this rich man sees exactly what's going on. And he sees the guy trying to take the wagon out of the mud and the horses, and he's stuck in the mud. And the rich person says, listen, you know, this is Erev Shabbat, a couple minutes before Shabbat, nobody's here to help him, and he goes and helps him. He's a good Jew. He says, I don't want him to be late for Shabbat, and he starts helping him. So he's a businessman. He doesn't know how to get a wagon out of the mud. So he goes into the mud, he gets all dirty, and he pulls the wagon and pushes, and it takes them an hour to get the wagon out of the mud. And in the meantime, the entire body is full of mud and his clothes are full of mud. Okay, he was able to get him out of the mud, but it was already 2-3 minutes before Shabbat, no time to change clothes, no time to clean up, and he goes dirty into the shul. And sits in the shul, the wealthy person full of mud, and the wagon driver clean. And the irony was here that they switched their jobs. If the wealthy person, I missed an important part of the story. That what happened was that came the end of the prayer, and there was a lot of poor people in the synagogue, and they didn't have where to go. So when they went to the Eglon, to the wagon driver, and told him, can you take us home? We don't have where to eat. He says, I'm very simple. I only have a piece of bread and some soup. I don't have what to give you to eat. So these poor people didn't have where to eat because the rich person that usually took all the poor people to their home, he wasn't there. He was busy with the wagon, helping the guy with the wagon. So the irony was that if the wagon driver would go and help the guy that got stuck in the mud, he's a wagon driver. He knows how to do it. He will take him out of it in a minute. That's his job. And if the rich person was in the synagogue, he's the one who has a lot of money, he would take all the poor people to his home and feed them. But their jobs got switched. So the rich person doesn't know how to get a wagon out of the mud, so it took him an hour. And the wagon driver doesn't have money, he couldn't take the poor people to his home. So the problem is in our life is that we, so to say, switch jobs. And we think that we need to do somebody else's job, or that I'm not focusing on my job. But really, Hashem says, listen, there are many, many different ways of serving me, and you have to focus on your job. It doesn't mean your job is better than the other. It doesn't mean you're more right than the other. It doesn't mean that you're smarter or better, or that I like you more. You're the engineer, you're the architect, you're the plumber, you're the electrician. So sometimes Hashem says, you are the rich person, I don't need you to get a wagon out of the mud, I need you to feed the poor people. And the other person says, you are the wagon driver, I don't want you to have a lot of money, I don't need you to feed people, I need you to help other people get their wagon out of their mud. So each and every one of us has a different job. And the tribes represent the separation that we have different jobs here. And Hashem says, I hired each and every one of you to do something different. And it's like in any type of structure, whether it's the army, whether it's building a building, whether it's a business. In a business, you have the sales person, you have the secretary, you have the bookkeeping, you have the cleaning lady. Everybody does something different. All together, they're making the business run. So when we come to question why we have the tribes, it's very simple, because Hashem says, listen, I created the separation because I want you to serve me separately, differently. I want you to use your own talents and character traits and serve me different than the other. That's the reason why we have tribes. Because here Hashem says, I want to make a beautiful picture and I need many different colors. If you're all going to be the same, there's nothing going to be exciting here. So we learn very simple from that, that there is the reason why we have tribes. In our generation, when we don't have tribes, we have groups, which many people say, why do we have to have groups? Why do we have to have so many different groups? Chabad and Breslev and Belz and Satmer and Vishnitz, whatever it is, all these groups. And even in the groups, there are groups. I mean, even when you generalize it, Sephardi and Ashkenaz, even in Ashkenaz, there's so many different groups. In Sephardi, different groups. Why? There is a reason why we have groups. There's something very deep behind the groups. The problem is that we just fight with each other. Instead of accepting each other and saying, good, I want you to be how you are. I want you to stay how you are, but to accept each other, our test is to see if we were able to accept each other and not fight with each other and not say, oh, I'm smarter than you, or my Rebbe is better, the Rebbe, than your Rebbe, and all sorts of nonsense like that. And if you're different, then I don't want you in my shul. Or some people say, like the joke that I said, oh, that shul I'm never going to go in. I've been to so many different shuls that either I was different and I was, you know, looked like as if I'm infected with something, or that I would be in a different shul and they wouldn't accept somebody or wouldn't let him to go up to the Torah because he's different. I was once in a shul, it was a Sephardi shul, and walked in Chabadnik, a Chassid from Chabad, and he had to say Kaddish. And according to their way, is that to say Kaddish, you have to be the Chazan. That's the halakha, what they go by, that the one who has to say Kaddish, he has to say to be the Chazan. So he came to the rabbi and told him, please, let me be the Chazan here, I have to say Kaddish. In the beginning, he was like, no, I'm not letting you be the Ashkenazi. And he says you're gonna. He said it in a funny way. You're not gonna understand. He told him, that's what he told him. I don't want you to be my chazan. You're gonna say it, you know, with this accent. But later on, and I was waiting to see what's going to happen there. But then the rabbi told him, listen, I understand you have to say kaddish. Okay, go up to be the chazan, but you have to say what we say. You have to say Patach Eliyahu. You have to say the Korban. You have to say it how we say it. You can't now come and start telling me vuz 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 vuz. He was imitating him, but telling him you're going to tell me with your accent. The point was that it could have ended up not nice by the rabbi of the shul telling him go away from here, you Ashkenazi. But he told him, okay, fine, it's okay. Say your Kaddish, but say it how we say it. But it was nice to see that it was like, okay, let's work together. We're all Jews. Just you know, this is our shul, say it like us. The point is that Hashem on purpose made it. Hashem on purpose made the separation to see if we can get along. If we were all the same, I can guarantee to you we're Jewish, we would still fight. So Hashem said, listen, I want you to practice your tolerance and your Avat Israel. I'm going to make you different. I'm going to make you look different. I'm going to make you act different. Now I want you to like each other, to respect each other, to love each other, to tolerate each other. So what if you're different? And that's the point. The point to learn from that is not why we have a separation, is how to deal with the separation. The separation, to make it a long story short, Hashem wants to paint a beautiful picture. He needs many colors. That's it. That is it. The point that we have to learn from that, yes, we are different, our faces are different, our opinions are different. You know, they say in Hebrew, "Al tam val reach ifshar litvakeach." On taste and smell, you cannot argue. You like falafel, I like shawarma, you like pizza, you like sushi, everybody likes something else. You like spicy, I don't like spicy. You like sweet, I don't like sweet. What, are you going to argue with me? I like purple, you like green. What, it means purple is a better color? No, that's your color. The point is that Hashem wants us to be united, and He wants us to like each other the same way that He loves us separate and different. He says, I want you to like each other even though you're different, and make space for each other, and tolerate each other, and be united even though you're different. So the Torah comes and teaches me a very basic things, and especially the Torah goes out of its way to emphasize, yes, there is a separation. Don't deny, don't pretend. You're different. Don't think that you're not different, but like it, accept it. And like a parent, it's almost like a parent saying, oh, I don't like that child. His complexion of his skin is a little bit darker. I told you, my children are all different. One of my kids is dark skin, one of the kids is light skin. Don't even think they're coming from the same family. One is completely brown hair, brown eyes, dark, and the other one, she's totally blonde, fair. So what, the parent is going to say, I like this child less because his skin is darker, or the skin is lighter? We have to resemble Hashem and love everybody equally, with their differences, with the way that they look different, they dress different, they talk different, they read out of the Torah different. Yeah, it's almost like an orchestra. Can you imagine having only violins or only drums? You look in an orchestra, there's like 50 types of instruments. And sometimes, you know, in an entire orchestra, there's one instrument, this triangle, 3-hour concert, he just goes ding. That's it, that's his job, just to go ding. And every 3 minutes he goes ding, ding, that's it. But it adds into the entire symphony. Some of the sounds, they just don't barely even hear them. They have one chord, that's it. That's how we are. And we have to understand that the more we play in harmony, then it sounds much better in Shemayim. The more that we are united, the more that we respect each other, then the music, the tune in Shemayim will sound nicer, and the painting that Hashem is doing will look much nicer. And that is the only way how to receive the Torah. And that's why this parasha is always before Shavuot. To teach us, you're separate, you were separate, you were born separate, there's a reason for that, but you're all brothers. And when they got the Torah, you know what it says? That they parked in front of the mountain, ki'ish echad belev echad. They were all like one person with one heart. So this parasha comes to teach me to go over my limits and say, okay, we are different, but I'm going to love each other equally. We're all coming from the same place and we all want the same thing. This is the lesson we need to learn from this parasha. Is that we have to go completely out of our way to make sure that with the separation we're still united. And that will allow us to get again the Torah with the coming of Mashiach, as it says, the Torah chadasha me'itit titzeh, and when Mashiach is going to come, he's going to reveal a new Torah, meaning that he's going to explain to us everything, but we want to get to this point already. And the only way, don't think that we're lacking anything else. People say we need all the Jews to do tshuva. We need the Jews to have Ahavat Israel. We need to be united. We need to tolerate each other. We need to love each other. That's what's going to bring the Geula. So Bezrat Hashem, if we want to take something small out of this whole lesson, is to love another person even though he's different than me. Even though that his skin is lighter or darker, or he says the words vuz, 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 or however he says the words, doesn't matter, he says oh, or oi, or e, or whatever sidur he has, doesn't matter. We're all together. And in Shemayim, Hashem loves us equally. Hashem doesn't love one more than the other. This is the most important lesson we need to apply, is that we have to just tolerate each other and love each other and make space for each other. And Bezrat Hashem, if we really practice that, that is really what's going to bring the redemption. Bezrat Hashem should happen very soon.